Samanyafala Sutta, The Fruits of the Ascetic Life, translated by Rupert Gethin. This is what I have heard. Once the Blessed One was staying in Rajagaha, in the mango grove of Jivaka Kumara Bhaka, with a great company of monks, 1,250 monks. It was the occasion of the observance day known as White Lotus, the 15th day at the end of the 4th month, and on that full moon night, King Ajatasattu of Magadha, son of the Princess of Vidaha, was seated up on the roof of his fine palace, surrounded by his ministers. Now on that observance day, King Ajatasattu of Magadha breathed a sigh. Delightful indeed is this moonlit night. Beautiful indeed is this moonlit night. Lovely indeed is this moonlit night. Peaceful indeed is this moonlit night. Auspicious indeed is this moonlit night. What ascetic or Brahman might we visit tonight, so that our heart might be set at rest? At these words, one of the ministers said to King Ajatasattu of Magadha, "There is Lord Purana Kassapa. He has a company and a following, and is the teacher of that following. He is well known, of some repute, one who has found a way across. He is thought holy by many, and possesses the pearls of wisdom. He went forth into the religious life long ago, and is experienced and of great age. My lord could visit Purana Kassapa. If my lord were to visit Purana Kassapa, his heart would certainly be set at rest." At these words, King Ajatasattu of Magadha remained silent. Another of the ministers said to King Ajatasattu of Magadha, "There is Lord Makhali Gosala. He has a company and a following, and is the teacher of that following. He is well known, of some repute, one who has found a way across. He is thought holy by many, and possesses the pearls of wisdom. He went forth into the religious life long ago, and is experienced and of great age. My lord could visit Makhali Gosala. If my lord were to visit Makhali Gosala, his heart would certainly be set at rest." At these words, King Ajatasattu of Magadha remained silent. Yet another of the ministers said to King Ajatasattu of Magadha, "There is Lord Ajita of the Blanket of Hair. He has a company and a following, and is the teacher of that following. He is well known, of some repute, one who has found a way across. He is thought holy by many, and possesses the pearls of wisdom. He went forth into the religious life long ago, and is experienced and of great age. My lord could visit Ajita of the Blanket of Hair. If my lord were to visit Ajita of the Blanket of Hair, his heart would certainly be set at rest." At these words, King Ajatasattu of Magadha remained silent. Yet another of the ministers said to King Ajatasattu of Magadha, "There is Lord Pakuta Kachayana. He has a company and a following, and is the teacher of that following. He is well known, of some repute, one who has found a way across. He is thought holy by many, and possesses the pearls of wisdom. He went forth into the religious life long ago, and is experienced and of great age. My lord could visit Pakuta Kachayana. If my lord were to visit Pakuta Kachayana, his heart would certainly be set at rest." At these words, King Ajatasattu of Magadha remained silent. Yet another of the ministers said to King Ajatasattu of Magadha, "There is Lord Nigantha Nataputta. He has a company and a following, and is the teacher of that following. He is well known, of some repute, one who has found a way across. He is thought holy by many and possesses the pearls of wisdom. He went forth into the religious life long ago and is experienced and of great age. My lord could visit Nigantha Nataputta. If my lord were to visit Nigantha Nataputta, his heart would certainly be set at rest. At these words, King Ajatasattu of Magadha remained silent. Yet another of the ministers said to King Ajatasattu of Magadha, "There is Lord Sanjaya Balatiputta. He has a company and a following, and is the teacher of that following. He is well known, of some repute, one who has found a way across. He is thought holy by many, and possesses the pearls of wisdom. He went forth into the religious life long ago, and is experienced, and of great age. My lord could visit Sanjaya Balatiputta. If my lord were to visit Sanjaya Balatiputta, his heart would certainly be set at rest." At these words, King Ajatasattu of Magadha remained silent. Now at that time, Jivaka Kumarabhaka was seated, keeping his silence, not far from King Ajatasattu of Magadha. Then the king said to Jivaka Kumarabhaka, "But why, good Jivaka, do you remain silent?" "There is Lord, the Blessed One, an Arahat, and perfect Buddha, who is staying in my mango grove with a great company of monks, 1,250 monks. Moreover, this lovely report has been spread abroad concerning the blessed Gotama. For the following reasons is he the Blessed One. He is an Arahat, a perfect Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, happy, one who understands the world, an unsurpassed charioteer of men to be tamed, teacher of gods and men, a blessed Buddha. My Lord could visit the Blessed One. If my lord were to visit the Blessed One, his heart would certainly be set at rest." "Then have elephants made ready for the journey, good Jivaka." "So be it, Lord," replied Jivaka Kumarabhaka to the King Ajatasattu of Magadha. He had 500 she-elephants made ready, and a riding tusker for the king. Then he announced to King Ajatasattu of Magadha, "The elephants have been made ready for your journey, Lord. It is now time for you to do as you think fit." Then King Ajatasattu of Magadha had one of his wives mounted on each of the 500 she-elephants, while he himself mounted the riding tusker, and then, accompanied by torchbearers, he went out from Rajagaha in great royal splendour and set off towards Jivaka Kumarabhaka's mango grove. Now, not far from the mango grove, King Ajatasattu of Magadha was gripped by fear. He was paralysed, and the hairs of his body stood on end. Frightened and agitated, with his hair standing on end, King Ajatasattu of Magadha said to Jivaka Kumarabhaka, "Are you perhaps deceiving me, good Jivaka? Are you perhaps tricking me, good Jivaka? Are you perhaps going to hand me over to my enemies, good Jivaka? For how can it be that from a great company of 1,250 monks there is not a sneeze, not a cough, not a murmur? Do not be afraid, Your Majesty. I am not deceiving you. I am not tricking you. I am not going to hand you over to your enemies. Go on, Your Majesty, go on. There are the lamps burning in the centre of the pavilion." Then, when he had gone by elephant as far as the ground would allow, King Ajatasattu of Magadha dismounted and approached the entrance of the assembly hall on foot. As he was approaching, he said to Jivaka Kumarabhaka, "But where is the Blessed One, good Jivaka?"
"There is the Blessed One, Your Majesty. There is the Blessed One, Your Majesty, seated in front of the company of monks, resting his back on the central pole, facing east." Then King Ajatasattu of Magadha approached the Blessed One and stood to one side. As he stood there surveying the company of monks, which remained completely silent, like a still pool, King Ajatasattu of Magadha breathed a sigh. May my son, the Prince Udayib Hadda, come to possess such calm as is now possessed by the company of monks. Your thoughts have turned to the one you love. The Prince Udayib Hadda is dear to me, sir. May my son, the Prince Udayib Hadda, come to possess such calm as is now possessed by the company of monks. Then, having saluted the Blessed One respectfully, and bowed to the company of monks with cupped hands, King Ajatasattu of Magadha sat down to one side. Once seated, King Ajatasattu of Magadha said to the Blessed One, "Sir, I have something I would like to ask the Blessed One about. That is, if the Blessed One will agree to answer a question for me on this occasion."
"Ask what you like, Your Majesty."
"There are various professions, sir. There are elephant riders, cavalrymen, charioteers, archers, standard-bearers, spies, quartermasters, high-ranking royal officers, front-line soldiers, great fighters, warriors, leather-clad soldiers, household slaves, cooks, barbers, bath attendants, sweet-makers, garland-makers, washermen, weavers, basket-makers, potters, those skilled in accounts and calculation, and various other professions of a similar sort. These people enjoy the evident fruits of their labour here and now. By their work they bring happiness and joy to themselves. They bring happiness and joy to their mothers and fathers, to their wives and children, and to their friends and acquaintances. And they provide ascetics and Brahmins with excellent offerings, for the sake of the world to come, bringing happy results and making for a heavenly rebirth. Is it possible to point out a fruit of the ascetic life that is similarly evident here and now?"
"Do you recall having asked this question of other ascetics and Brahmins, Your Majesty?"
"I do recall having asked this question of other ascetics and Brahmins, sir." "Your Majesty, if it is not too much trouble for you, please tell me how they answered you."
"It is no trouble where the Blessed One, or one like the Blessed One, is concerned."
"Then please speak, Your Majesty."
"Once, sir, I approached Purana Kassapa. Having approached, I saluted him respectfully and exchanged pleasing and polite words with him before sitting down to one side. Once seated, I said to Purana Kassapa, 'Kassapa, sir, there are various professions, elephant riders, cavalrymen, charioteers, archers, standard-bearers, spies, quartermasters, high-ranking royal officers, front-line soldiers, great fighters, warriors, leather-clad soldiers, household slaves, cooks, barbers, bath attendants, sweet-makers, garland-makers, washermen, weavers, basket-makers, potters, those skilled in accounts and calculation, and various other professions of a similar sort. These people enjoy the evident fruits of their labour here and now. By their work they bring happiness and joy to themselves. They bring happiness and joy to their mothers and fathers, to their wives and children, and to their friends and acquaintances. And they provide ascetics and Brahmins with excellent offerings for the sake of the world to come, bringing happy results and making for a heavenly rebirth. Is it possible to point out a fruit of the ascetic life that is similarly evident here and now?"
When I had asked this, Purana Kassapa answered me as follows: "When one injures or gets another to injure, wounds or gets another to wound, tortures or gets another to torture, causes grief or distress, intimidates or gets others to intimidate, when one harms living creatures, takes what is not given, breaks into houses, plunders, commits burglary, waits in ambush on the road, goes with others' wives, tells lies, when one acts, then no wrong is done. If someone were to take a razor-edged discus and make of the creatures of this earth one single mass of flesh, one single heap of flesh, There would be nothing bad in that. Nothing bad would come of it. Again, if someone were to go along the southern bank of the Ganges, killing and getting others to kill, wounding and getting others to wound, torturing and getting others to torture, there would be nothing bad in that. Nothing bad would come of it. Again, if someone were to go along the northern bank of the Ganges, making gifts and getting others to make gifts, performing sacrifices and getting others to perform sacrifices, there would be nothing good in that. Nothing good would come of it. In giving, discipline, restraint, and speaking the truth, there is nothing good. Nothing good comes of them. In this way, sir, when he was asked about an evident fruit of the ascetic life, Purana Kassapa gave an explanation of the non-existence of action. It is as if someone who was asked about a mango gave an explanation of a breadfruit, or someone who was asked about a breadfruit gave an explanation of a mango. Then, sir, I thought, but how is a person like me to judge whether an ascetic or Brahmin living in my realm should be reproached? So I neither agreed nor disagreed with Purana Kassapa's words, and although my heart was not gladdened, I did not voice my dissatisfaction, but got up from my seat and went away, neither accepting his words nor countering them. And once, sir, I approached Makali Gosala. Having approached, I saluted him respectfully and exchanged pleasing and polite words with him before sitting down to one side. Once seated, I said to Makali Gosala, "Gosala, sir, there are various professions. These people enjoy the evident fruits of their labour here and now. Is it possible to point out a fruit of the ascetic life that is similarly evident here and now?" When I had asked this, Makali Gosala answered me as follows. "There is no reason nor cause for the defilement of beings. Beings become defiled without any reason and without any cause. There is no reason nor cause for the purification of beings. Beings become purified without any reason and without any cause. There is nothing one can do, nothing anyone else can do. No human action, no force, no effort, no human striving, no human endeavour has any effect. All beings, all breathing things, all living things, all organisms are impotent, without any power or strength. They are developed by fate, chance and nature, experiencing happiness and unhappiness in the six types of existence. There are 1,400,000 principal kinds of birth, plus 6,000 and 600. There are 500 actions, plus 5 actions, 3 actions, 1 action, and half an action. There are 62 ways, 62 lesser aeons, 6 types, 8 human stages. There are 4,900 births as an ascetic, 4,900 as a wanderer, 4,900 among the Nagas, 2,000 as companions of the chief of gods, 36 in dusty places, 7 sentient births, 7 insentient births, 7 births without bonds, 7 divine, 7 human, 7 demonic. There are 7 lakes, 7 transferences of the soul plus 700, 7 falls plus 700, 7 dreams plus 700. For 8,400,000 great aeons, the fool and the wise man alike will roam and wander before bringing suffering to an end. So it is no use thinking that by means of virtuous behaviour, by some vow, penance or spiritual practice, one can bring unripe karma to fruition or deliberately exhaust ripe karma. This cannot be done. Happiness and unhappiness come in fixed measures, and the round of rebirth has a definite limit. There is no way to make it longer or shorter, no way to make it better or worse. It is just like a ball of string that has been let go so that it rolls out until it has unravelled. In exactly the same way, the fool and wise man alike will roam and wander before bringing suffering to an end. In this way, sir, when he was asked about an evident fruit of the ascetic life, Makali Gosala gave an explanation of purification through the round of birth. It is as if someone who was asked about a mango gave an explanation of a breadfruit, or someone who was asked about a breadfruit gave an explanation of a mango. Then, sir, I thought, but how is a person like me to judge whether an ascetic or Brahman living in my realm should be reproached? So I neither agreed nor disagreed with Makali Gosala's words, and although my heart was not gladdened, I did not voice my dissatisfaction, but got up from my seat and went away, neither accepting his words nor countering them. And once, sir, I approached Ajita of the Blanket of Hair. Having approached, I saluted him respectfully and exchanged pleasing and polite words with him before sitting down to one side. Once seated, I said to Ajita of the Blanket of Hair, "Ajita, sir, there are various professions. These people enjoy the evident fruits of their labour here and now. Is it possible to point out a fruit of the ascetic life that is similarly evident here and now?" When I had asked this, Ajita of the Blanket of Hair answered me as follows. "Giving is nothing. Sacrifice and offerings are nothing. Good and bad deeds have no fruit or result. There is no this world and the next. One's mother and father are nothing. There are no beings born in heaven, no ascetics or Brahmins who have reached perfection and live the perfect life, who gain for themselves a direct knowledge of this world and the next, and, having experienced it directly, make it known. A person is formed of the four elements, and when he dies, the earth returns to and merges with the general mass of earth, the water with the general mass of water, the fire with the general mass of fire, the air with the general mass of air. The sense faculties pass into the ether. Four men put the dead body on a bier and go. They talk about him as far as the cremation ground, and there his bones turn grey and his offerings end in ashes. The idea of giving is stupid, the empty and lying prattle of those who declare there is some point to life. After the breaking up of the body, the fool and the wise man alike are cut off and perish. They do not survive after death. In this way, sir, when he was asked about an evident fruit of the ascetic life, Ajita of the Blanket of Hair gave an explanation of the doctrine of nihilism. It is as if someone who was asked about a mango gave an explanation of a breadfruit, or someone who was asked about a breadfruit gave an explanation of a mango. Then, sir, I thought, but how is a person like me to judge whether an ascetic or Brahman living in my realm should be reproached? So I neither agreed nor disagreed with Ajita of the Blanket of Hair's words. And although my heart was not gladdened, I did not voice my dissatisfaction, but got up from my seat and went away, neither accepting his words nor countering them. And once, sir, I approached Pukuta Kachayana. Having approached, I saluted him respectfully and exchanged pleasing and polite words with him before sitting down to one side. Once seated, I said to Pukuta Kachayana, "Kachayana, sir, there are various professions. These people enjoy the evident fruits of their labour here and now. Is it possible to point out a fruit of the ascetic life that is similarly evident here and now?" When I had asked this, Pukuta Kachayana answered me as follows. "There are seven primary constituents that are not made, nor constructed, not created, nor produced. They cannot be damaged, and stand erect and firm as pillars. They do not move or alter. They cannot bring harm to one another, nor can one affect the happiness, unhappiness, or happiness and unhappiness of the others. What are these seven? The constituent of earth, the constituent of water, the constituent of fire, the constituent of wind, happiness, unhappiness, and the soul the seventh. These are the seven primary constituents. So there is no one who kills or causes one to kill, no one who hears or causes one to hear, no one who perceives or causes one to perceive. If someone cuts off someone's head with a sharp sword, he doesn't take anyone's life. The sword just passes through the space between these seven constituents. In this way, sir, when he was asked about an evident fruit of the ascetic life, Pakuta Kacayana gave an explanation of one thing in terms of another. It is as if someone who was asked about a mango gave an explanation of a breadfruit, or someone who was asked about a breadfruit gave an explanation of a mango. Then, sir, I thought, but how is a person like me to judge whether an ascetic or Brahmin living in my realm should be reproached? So I neither agreed nor disagreed with Pakuta Kacayana's words, and although my heart was not gladdened, I did not voice my dissatisfaction, but got up from my seat and went away, neither accepting his words nor countering them. And once, sir, I approached the Niganthahnathaputta. Having approached, I saluted him respectfully and exchanged pleasing and polite words with him before sitting down to one side. Once seated, I said to the Niganthahnathaputta, Ajivesana, sir, there are various professions. These people enjoy the evident fruits of their labour here and now. Is it possible to point out a fruit of the ascetic life that is similarly evident here and now? When I had asked this, the Niganthahnathaputta answered me as follows. A Nigantha is controlled by the discipline of the four restraints. He is disciplined in his use of water. He is committed to avoiding evil. He is cleansed by avoiding evil. He is filled with the sense of avoiding evil. And when, Your Majesty, a Nigantha is controlled by the discipline of the four restraints in this way, he is called one who is accomplished in himself, one who is controlled in himself, one who is firm in himself. In this way, sir, when he was asked about an evident fruit of the ascetic life, the Niganthahnathaputta gave an explanation of the discipline of the four restraints. It is as if someone who was asked about a mango gave an explanation of a breadfruit, or someone who was asked about a breadfruit gave an explanation of a mango. Then, sir, I thought, but how is a person like me to judge whether an ascetic or Brahmin living in my realm should be reproached? So I neither agreed nor disagreed with Niganthahnathaputta's words. And although my heart was not gladdened, I did not voice my dissatisfaction, but got up from my seat and went away, neither accepting his words nor countering them. And once, sir, I approached Sanjaya Balatiputta. Having approached, I saluted him respectfully and exchanged pleasing and polite words with him before sitting down to one side. Once seated, I said to Sanjaya Balatiputta, Sanjaya, sir, there are various professions. These people enjoy the evident fruits of their labour here and now. Is it possible to point out a fruit of the ascetic life that is similarly evident here and now? When I had asked this, Sanjaya Balatiputta answered me as follows. Is there another world? If you asked me this, then if what I thought was that there was another world, then there is another world, is the answer I would give you. But that is not what I think. I do not say it is so. I do not say it is otherwise. I do not say it is not so. And I do not say that it is not not so. Is there no other world? Is it that there both is and is not another world? Is it that there neither is nor is not another world? Are there beings born in heaven? Are there no beings born in heaven? Is it that there both are and are not beings born in heaven? Is it that there neither are nor are not beings born in heaven? Do good and bad deeds have any fruit or result? Do good and bad deeds have no fruit or result? Do good and bad deeds both have and not have any fruit or result? Do good and bad deeds neither have nor not have any fruit or result? Does the Tathagata exist after death? Does the Tathagata not exist after death? Does the Tathagata both exist and not exist after death? Does the Tathagata neither exist nor not exist after death? If you asked me this, then if what I thought was that the Tathagata neither existed nor did not exist after death, then the Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist after death is the answer I would give you. But that is not what I think. I do not say it is so. I do not say it is otherwise. I do not say it is not so. And I do not say that it is not not so. In this way, sir, when he was asked about an evident fruit of the ascetic life, Sanjaya Balatiputta gave an explanation by way of prevaricating. It is as if someone who was asked about a mango gave an explanation of a breadfruit, or someone who was asked about a breadfruit gave an explanation of a mango. Then, sir, I thought, of all these ascetics and Brahmins, he is the biggest fool and the most confused. But how is a person like me to judge whether an ascetic or Brahmin living in my realm should be reproached? So I neither agreed nor disagreed with Sanjaya Balatiputta's words. And although my heart was not gladdened, I did not voice my dissatisfaction, but got up from my seat and went away, neither accepting his words nor countering them. So now, sir, I put my question to the Blessed One too. There are various professions. These people enjoy the evident fruits of their labour here and now. Is it possible, sir, to point out to me a fruit of the ascetic life that is similarly evident here and now? It is possible, Your Majesty. Now I shall ask you a question in return, and you should answer it as you like. What do you think, Your Majesty? There might be one of your men, a slave and a servant, who gets up before you and goes to bed after you, who waits for your instructions, who is pleasing in his conduct and gracious in his speech, hanging on your words. He might think, how remarkable, how extraordinary the outcome and result of good deeds. There is King Ajatasattu of Magadha, son of the princess of Vidaha, a man, and I too am a man. There is King Ajatasattu of Magadha, son of the princess of Vidaha, provided and furnished with the pleasures of the five senses, amusing himself like some god, while I am his slave and servant, getting up before him and going to bed after him, waiting for his instructions, pleasing in my conduct and gracious in my speech, hanging on his words. Surely if I were to perform some good deeds, I would be like him. Why don't I shave off my hair and beard, put on ochre robes, and go forth from home into homelessness? After some time he might shave off his hair and beard, put on ochre robes, and go forth from home into homelessness. Once he had gone forth like this, he might live keeping check on his body, speech, and mind, content with the minimum of food and clothing, taking pleasure in seclusion. Now, if your men should tell you, Lord, you really ought to know that one of your men who is a slave and servant, who gets up before you and goes to bed after you, who waits for your instructions, who is pleasing in his conduct and gracious in his speech, hanging on your words, has shaved off his hair and beard, put on ochre robes, and gone forth from home into homelessness. And now that he has gone forth like this, he lives keeping check on his body, speech, and mind, content with a minimum of food and clothing, taking pleasure in seclusion. Would you really say, Gentlemen, that man should return to me and once again be a slave and servant, getting up before me and going to bed after me, waiting for my instructions, pleasing in his conduct and gracious in his speech, hanging on my words. Not this, sir. In fact, we would salute him respectfully and get up and invite him to sit down, offering the requisites of robes, arms, lodging, medicine in case of illness, and provide him with proper care and protection. What do you think, Your Majesty? If that is the case, is there an evident fruit of the ascetic life or not? Certainly, sir, if that is the case, there is an evident fruit of the ascetic life. Your Majesty, this is the first fruit of the ascetic life, evident here and now, that I have indicated to you. But is it possible, sir, to point out to me a further fruit of the ascetic life that is similarly evident here and now? It is possible, Your Majesty. Now I shall ask you a question in return, and you should answer it as you like. What do you think, Your Majesty? There might be one of your men, a farmer and householder, in your service, who increases your store of wealth. He might think, how remarkable, how extraordinary the outcome and result of good deeds. There is King Ajatasattu of Magadha, son of the Princess of Vidaha, a man, and I too am a man. There is King Ajatasattu of Magadha, son of the Princess of Vidaha, provided and furnished with the pleasures of the five senses, amusing himself like some god, while I am a farmer and householder in his service, increasing his store of wealth. Surely, if I were to perform some good deeds, I would be like him. Why don't I shave off my hair and beard, put on ochre robes, and go forth from home into homelessness? And after some time he might give up his possessions, whether many or few, and leave behind his circle of relatives, whether small or large. Then he might shave off his hair and beard, put on ochre robes, and go forth from home into homelessness. Once he had gone forth like this, he might live keeping check on his body, speech, and mind, content with the minimum of food and clothing, taking pleasure in seclusion. Now if your men should tell you, Lord, you really ought to know that one of your men, a farmer and householder in your service, who increases your store of wealth, has shaved off his hair and beard, put on ochre robes, and gone forth from home into homelessness. And now he has gone forth like this, he lives keeping check on his body, speech, and mind, content with the minimum of food and clothing, taking pleasure in seclusion. Would you really say, Gentlemen, that man should return to me and once again be a farmer and householder in my service, who increases my store of wealth? Not this, sir. In fact, we would salute him respectfully and get up and invite him to sit down, offering the requisites of robes, arms, lodging, medicine in case of illness, and provide him with proper care and protection. What do you think, Your Majesty? If that is the case, is there an evident fruit of the ascetic life or not? Certainly, sir, if that is the case, there is an evident fruit of the ascetic life. Your Majesty, this is the second fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now that I have indicated to you. But is it possible, sir, to point out to me a further fruit of the ascetic life that is similarly evident here and now, one that is superior and more refined? It is possible, Your Majesty. Listen. Pay careful attention to what I shall say. Yes, sir. King Ajatasattu of Magadha, son of the Princess of Vidaha, replied. Now, Your Majesty, a Tathagata appears in the world, an Arahat, a perfect Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, happy, one who understands the world, unsurpassed charioteer of men to be tamed, teacher of gods and men, a blessed Buddha. He gains for himself a direct knowledge of this world with its gods, its Mara and Brahma, of this generation with its ascetics and Brahmins, its princes and peoples, and having experienced this directly, he makes it known. He teaches the truth that is beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, beautiful in the end, both in its spirit and in its letter. He makes clear the pure spiritual life in all its perfection. A householder, his son, or someone born of some family hears this truth, and when he hears it, he gains faith in the Tathagata. Having acquired such faith, he reflects as follows. Living in a house is restricted and cluttered. Going forth is a life wide open. It is not easy to practice the spiritual life in all its fullness and purity, like a polished shell while living in a house. Why don't I shave off my hair and beard, put on ochre robes, and go forth from home into homelessness? And after some time, he might give up his possessions, whether many or few, and leave behind his circle of relatives, whether small or large. Then he might shave off his hair and beard, put on ochre robes, and go forth from home into homelessness. Once he has gone forth like this, he lives according to the restraints of the monastic rule. He is accomplished in his conduct and dealings with people, seeing danger in the smallest of faults. He undertakes and trains in the precepts. His acts of body and speech are wholesome. He follows a completely pure way of life, is accomplished in his moral behaviour, guards the doors of the senses, possesses mindfulness and full awareness, and is content. And how, Your Majesty, is he accomplished in his moral behaviour? In this, a monk refrains from killing living creatures. He discards sticks and swords, and is gentle and full of concern, remaining sympathetic and well-disposed towards all creatures and beings. This is one aspect of his moral behaviour. Letting go of what has not been given to him, he refrains from taking what is not given. Accepting and wanting only what is given, he lives honestly, without stealing. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Giving up the non-celibate life, he follows a life of celibacy. He lives detached, refraining from the vulgar practice of copulation. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Giving up untrue speech, he refrains from untrue speech. He speaks the truth, is committed to the truth. He is reliable, trustworthy, and does not deceive people. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Giving up malicious speech, he refrains from malicious speech. When he hears something from people here, he does not tell others in order to create a rift with the people here, nor, when he hears something from others, does he tell the people here in order to create a rift with those others. Thus he brings together those who are divided and encourages those who are united. As one who takes pleasure in and is pleased with harmony, as one who is delighted with harmony, he speaks words that will bring about harmony. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Giving up unkind speech, he refrains from unkind speech. He speaks the kind of words that are not hurtful, but pleasing to the ear, warm, touching the heart, courteous, that people find pleasing and charming. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Giving up idle chatter, he refrains from idle chatter. He speaks at the right time, in accordance with the facts, with words that are helpful and concern the teaching and the discipline. He speaks words that should be treasured, that are appropriate to the occasion, to the point, and helpful. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. He refrains from harming seeds and plants. He takes one meal a day, not eating at night, refraining from food at the wrong time. He refrains from attending shows of dancing, singing, and music. He refrains from wearing, adorning, and beautifying himself with garlands, perfumes, and ointments. He refrains from using high and luxurious beds. He refrains from accepting silver or gold. He refrains from accepting uncooked grain, raw meat, women or girls, male and female slaves, sheep and goats, chickens and pigs, elephants, cattle, horses and mares, fields and land. He refrains from acting as a go-between or messenger. He refrains from buying and selling. He refrains from cheating with false weights, metals and measures. He refrains from the crooked practices of bribery, cheating and fraud. He abstains from maiming, murder, imprisoning, robbery, pillage and violence. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while still habitually harming seeds and plants, roots, stems or shoots or buds or seeds, he refrains from harming such seeds and plants. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while still habitually keeping stored up goods of foods, drinks, clothing, carriages, bedding, perfumes and foodstuffs, he refrains from keeping such stored up goods. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while still habitually visiting shows, dances, singing, music, fairs, recitations, hand clapping, the chanting of bards, drumming, fairy scenes, acrobatics, fights of elephants, horses, buffaloes, bulls, goats, rams, cocks and quails, bouts at quarterstaff, boxing, wrestling, sham fights, roll calls, battle manoeuvres, reviews. He refrains from visiting such shows. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful, while still indulging in games and recreations, games on boards with 8 or 10 rows, visualised board games, hopscotch, spillikin, dice, sticks, painting shapes with the hand, ball games, blowing through toy pipes, playing with toy ploughs, turning somersaults, playing with toy windmills made of leaves, playing with toy measures, toy carts or toy bows, guessing at letters, guessing thoughts, mimicking deformities, he refrains from such games. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while still habitually using high and luxurious beds, settees, divans, goat's hair coverlets, patchwork coverlets, white blankets, woolen coverlets embroidered with flowers, quilts stuffed with cotton wool, coverlets embroidered with figures of lions and tigers, rugs with fur on both sides, rugs with fur on one side, coverlets embroidered with gems, silk coverlets, giant rugs, elephant, horse, and chariot rugs, rugs of antelope skins, rugs of deer skins, rugs with awnings above, couches with red pillows for the head and feet. He refrains from using such high and luxurious beds. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while still habitually adorning and beautifying themselves, rubbing in scented powders, shampooing, bathing, massaging, using mirrors, ointments, garlands, powders, cosmetics, bracelets, necklaces, walking sticks, boxes, rapiers, sunshades, embroidered slippers, turbans, diadems, wisps of the yak's tail, and long-fringed white robes. He refrains from such adorning and beautifying of himself. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while still addicted to childish conversation, talk of kings, thieves, ministers, armies, horrors, battles, food, drink, clothes, beds, garlands, perfumes, relations, carriages, villages, towns, cities, and countries, women, heroes, gossip on the streets or at wells, talk about the departed, talk of this and that, speculations about the world and the ocean, talk of what is and isn't. He refrains from such childish conversation. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while still addicted to quarrelsome talk, "You don't understand this teaching and discipline, I do." "How could you understand this teaching and discipline?" "Your practice is quite wrong, mine is right. What I say can be backed up, what you say can't. You are stating last what ought to be said first, and first what ought to be said last. What you have thought out has been overturned. Your point has been bettered, you're refuted. Go and work out how to save your argument or disentangle yourself if you can." He refrains from such quarrelsome talk. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while still acting as messengers and go-betweens for kings, their ministers, members of the ruler class, Brahmins, householders, young men who say, "Go there, come here, take this, bring that here." He refrains from acting as a messenger and go-between in this way. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while still scheming, talking, hinting, belittling others, pursuing gain with gain. He refrains from such scheming and talking. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while pursuing a wrong means of livelihood and making their living by means of childish arts, such as palm reading, reading omens and signs, interpreting celestial portents, interpreting dreams, fortune-telling from marks on the body, reading omens from the marks on cloth gnawed by mice, offering fire oblations, offering oblations from a ladle, offering to the gods husks, red rice powder, ghee and oil, making offerings from the mouth into the fire, offering oblations of blood, reading the knuckles, determining the site of a house as lucky or not, making predictions for ministers of state, laying demons in a cemetery, laying ghosts, knowing the charms for living in an earthen house, snake charming, poison craft, scorpion craft, mouse craft, bird craft, crow craft, telling the number of years a man has to live, reciting charms to protect against arrows, knowing the language of animals. He refrains from pursuing a wrong means of livelihood and making his living by means of such childish arts. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while pursuing a wrong means of livelihood and making their living by means of childish arts, such as reading the good luck signs in gems, staffs, garments, swords, arrows, bows, weapons, women, men, boys, girls, slaves, slave girls, elephants, horses, buffaloes, bulls, oxen, goats, sheep, chickens, quails, monitor lizards, earrings, tortoises, and other animals. He refrains from pursuing a wrong means of livelihood and making his living by means of such childish arts. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while pursuing a wrong means of livelihood and making their living by means of childish arts, such as making predictions. "The princes will march out. They will march back. Our princes will attack. The enemies will retreat. The enemies' princes will attack, and ours will retreat. Our princes will gain the victory, and the enemies suffer defeat. The enemies' princes will gain the victory, and ours suffer defeat. Thus victory will be theirs, and defeat theirs. He refrains from pursuing a wrong means of livelihood, and making his living by means of such childish arts. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful, while pursuing a wrong means of livelihood, and making their living by means of childish arts, such as predicting there will be an eclipse of the moon, an eclipse of the sun, an eclipse of a star, the sun or moon will follow their normal course, the sun or moon will depart from their normal course, the stars will follow their normal course, the stars will depart from their normal course, there will be a fall of meteors, a glow in the skies, an earthquake, thundering of the gods, there will be a rising or setting, a darkening or brightening of the sun, moon, stars. By predicting such and such a result from an eclipse of the moon, of the sun, their departure from their normal course, a fall of meteors, the brightening of the sun, moon, or stars. He refrains from pursuing a wrong means of livelihood, and making his living by means of such childish arts. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful, while pursuing a wrong means of livelihood, and making their living by means of childish arts, such as predicting abundant rainfall, a drought, a good harvest, a famine, peace, danger, disease, health, making calculations on the fingers or in the head, estimating amounts, composing verse, studying the nature of the world. He refrains from pursuing a wrong means of livelihood and making his living by means of such childish arts. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful while pursuing a wrong means of livelihood, and making their living by means of childish arts, such as fixing a lucky day for bringing home or sending out a bride or groom to be married, fixing a lucky time for making or breaking contracts, for saving or spending money, using charms to make people lucky or unlucky, giving medicine to stop a woman miscarrying, making charms to paralyze the tongue or lock the jaw, reciting spells to control a man's hands or to cause deafness, obtaining oracular answers from a mirror, a girl, or a god, worshipping of the sun, the great one, breathing fire, invoking Siri. He refrains from pursuing a wrong means of livelihood and making his living by means of such childish arts. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Whereas some ascetics and Brahmins consume the food offered by the faithful, while pursuing a wrong means of livelihood and making their living by means of childish arts, such as vowing gifts to a god in return for favour, paying such vows, repeating the charms for living in an earthen house, causing virility, causing impotence, determining lucky sites for building, consecrating such sites, ritually rinsing the mouth, giving ritual baths, making offering into the sacrificial fire, administering emetics and purgatives, expectorants, eardrops, eye drops, nose drops, collyrium and ointment for the eyes, practicing as an eye doctor, a surgeon, a children's doctor, administering medicine from roots, administering and expelling herbal medicines. He refrains from pursuing a wrong means of livelihood and making his living by means of such childish arts. This is a further aspect of his moral behaviour. Your Majesty, a monk who is accomplished in moral behaviour in this way sees no danger anywhere on account of his restraint in moral behaviour. Just as an anointed ruler who has defeated his enemies sees no danger anywhere on account of his enemies, in exactly the same way, a monk who is accomplished in moral behaviour in this way sees no danger anywhere on account of his restraint in moral behaviour. Possessed of this whole range of noble moral behaviour, he experiences the happiness of being without guilt. It is in this way, Your Majesty, that he is accomplished in moral behaviour. And how, Your Majesty, does a monk guard the doors of the senses? In this, when he looks at a visible object with his eyes, he does not hold on to the general experience nor particular aspects. Since someone who lives with the sense of sight unchecked might be affected by longing and discontent, by bad, unwholesome mental qualities, he tries to practice checking the sense of sight. He guards it and achieves restraint. When he hears a sound with his ears, when he smells a smell with his nose, when he tastes a taste with his tongue, when he touches an object of touch with his body, when he is conscious of a thought in his mind, he does not grasp at the general experience nor at particular aspects. Since someone who lives with the mind faculty unchecked might be affected by longing and discontent, by bad, unwholesome mental qualities, he tries to practice checking the mind faculty. He guards it and achieves restraint. Possessed of this noble restraint of the senses, he experiences a natural happiness in himself. It is in this way, Your Majesty, that he guards the doors of the senses. And how, Your Majesty, does a monk possess mindfulness and full awareness? In moving forward and turning back, a monk acts in full awareness. In looking ahead and looking around, he acts with full awareness. In bending and straightening his limbs, he acts with full awareness. In wearing his inner and outer robes and carrying his alms bowl, he acts with full awareness. In eating, drinking, chewing, and swallowing, he acts with full awareness. In defecating and urinating, he acts with full awareness. In walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, speaking, and keeping silent, he acts with full awareness. It is in this way, Your Majesty, that a monk possesses mindfulness and full awareness. And how, Your Majesty, is a monk content? In this, a monk is content with the robe to cover the body, and with alms food to fill his stomach. Wherever he needs to go, he can just go taking these. Just as a winged bird flies wherever it needs to fly with its wings as its only burden. In exactly the same way, wherever he needs to go, a monk can just go taking these. It is in this way, Your Majesty, that a monk is content. Possessed of this whole range of noble moral behaviour, this noble restraint of the senses, this noble mindfulness and full awareness, and this noble contentment, he chooses a secluded dwelling, the forest, the root of a tree, a mountain, a rocky ravine, a cave, cremation ground, forest grove, the open air, a pile of straw. When he has returned from collecting alms food and eaten his meal, he sits down, crossing his legs, straightens his body, and establishes mindfulness in front of him. Giving up longing for the world, he lives with a mind that is free of longing. He purifies his mind of longing. Giving up hostility and hatred, he lives with a mind that is without hostility, sympathetic and well disposed towards all creatures and beings. He purifies his mind of hostility and hatred. Giving up dullness and lethargy, he lives with a mind that is free of dullness and lethargy. With his consciousness bright, he is mindful and fully aware, and purifies his mind of dullness and lethargy. Giving up agitation and worry, he lives unagitated. With his mind calmed, he purifies his mind of agitation and worry. Giving up doubt, he lives as one who has overcome his doubt, free of uncertainty about wholesome qualities. He purifies his mind of doubt. It is as if, Your Majesty, a person were to take out a loan in order to undertake some business, and that business were to succeed so that he could pay off the original loan, and the interest, and have something left over for jewellery for his wife. He would then think, "Previously I took out a loan in order to undertake some business, and that business has succeeded, so that I have paid off the original loan and the interest, and have something left over for jewellery for my wife. And as a result, that person would be glad and would take pleasure in that. It is as if, Your Majesty, a person were sick, and being in pain and seriously ill, he might go off his food, and his body would lose all its strength. After a time, he might recover from that sickness and regain his appetite, so that his body would get strong. He would then think, "Previously I was sick, and being in pain and seriously ill, I went off my food, and my body lost all its strength. But now I have recovered from that sickness and regained my appetite, and my body is strong." And as a result, that person would be glad and would take pleasure in that. It is as if, Your Majesty, a person were locked up in prison. After a time, he might be released from that imprisonment safe and sound, and without any loss of his property. He would then think, "Previously I was locked up in prison, but now I have been released from that imprisonment safe and sound, and without any loss of my property." And as a result, that person would be glad and would take pleasure in that. It is as if, Your Majesty, a person were a slave, not his own master, but subject to someone else and unable to go where he pleased. After a time, he might be freed from that slavery and become his own master, not subject to someone else, and, as a free man, able to go where he pleased. He would then think, "Previously I was a slave, not my own master, but subject to someone else and unable to go where I pleased. But now I have been freed from that slavery and become my own master, not subject to someone else, and, as a free man, able to go where I please." And as a result, that person would be glad and would take pleasure in that. It is as if, Your Majesty, a rich and wealthy man were to set out on a long journey through a wilderness where food was scarce and the dangers many. After a time, he might get across that wilderness and reach the edge of a town unharmed, somewhere safe, without dangers. He would then think, "Previously I set out on a long journey through a wilderness where food was scarce and the dangers many. But now I have got across that wilderness and reached the edge of a town unharmed, somewhere safe, without dangers." And as a result, that person would be glad and would take pleasure in that. Your Majesty, as long as a monk sees that these five hindrances have not been given up in himself, a monk views them in exactly that way, as a debt, an illness, a prison, slavery, and a long journey through a wilderness. Similarly, when a monk sees that the five hindrances have been given up in himself, he views that precisely as being free of debt, free of illness, release from imprisonment, being a freed man, and reaching a safe place. When he sees that the five hindrances have been given up in himself, gladness arises. And when one is glad, joy arises. When the mind is joyful, the body becomes tranquil, and when the body is tranquil, one experiences happiness. The mind of someone who is happy becomes concentrated, completely secluded from sense desires and unwholesome qualities. He lives having attained the joy and happiness of the first absorption, which is accompanied by thinking and examining, and born of seclusion. He suffuses, fills, soaks and drenches this very body with the joy and happiness that come from seclusion, so that there is no part of his body that is untouched by that joy and happiness. It is as if a skilled bath attendant or his pupil were to sprinkle bath powder into a bronze dish and then knead it together, adding the water drop by drop, so that the ball of soap absorbed and soaked up the moisture until it was saturated with moisture, yet not quite dripping. In exactly the same way, the monk suffuses, fills, soaks and drenches this very body with the joy and happiness that come from seclusion, so that there is no part of his body that is untouched by that joy and happiness. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Furthermore, Your Majesty, By stilling thinking and examining, a monk lives having attained the joy and happiness of the second absorption, a state of inner clarity and mental unification that is without thinking and examining, and is born of concentration. He suffuses, fills, soaks and drenches this very body with the joy and happiness that come from concentration, so that there is no part of his body that is untouched by that joy and happiness. It is as if there were a pool where water sprang up, but which had no water flowing into it from the east, the west, the north, or the south, and which the god did not fill with rain from time to time. Now when the cool waters sprang up in that pool, they would suffuse, fill, soak, and drench that same pool with cool water, so that no part of that pool would be untouched by the cool water. In exactly the same way, the monk suffuses, fills, soaks, and drenches this very body with the joy and happiness that come from concentration, so that there is no part of his body that is untouched by that joy and happiness. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Furthermore, Your Majesty, by having no desire for joy, a monk lives equanimously, mindful and fully aware. He experiences the bodily happiness of which the noble ones speak, saying, "Equanimous and mindful, one lives happily." And so he lives, having attained the third absorption. He suffuses, fills, soaks and drenches this very body with a happiness distinct from joy, so that there is no part of his body that is untouched by that happiness. It is as if, Your Majesty, in a pond of blue, red or white lotuses, there were some lotuses that had come into bud and grown in the water, never rising out of the water, but flourishing beneath its surface. Those lotuses would be suffused, filled, soaked and drenched from root to tip with cool water, so that no part of those blue, red or white lotuses would be untouched by the cool water. In exactly the same way, the monk suffuses, fills, soaks and drenches this very body with a happiness distinct from joy, so that there is no part of his body that is untouched by that happiness. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now, that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Furthermore, Your Majesty, by letting go of happiness and unhappiness, as a result of the earlier disappearance of pleasure and pain, a monk lives having attained the pure equanimity and mindfulness of the fourth absorption, which is free of happiness and unhappiness. He sits, suffusing this very body with a mind that is thoroughly purified and cleansed, so that there is no part of his body that is untouched by that thoroughly purified and cleansed mind. It is as if, Your Majesty, a person were to sit down, having wrapped himself from head to foot in a freshly washed cloth, so that there was no part of his body that was untouched by that freshly washed cloth. In exactly the same way, the monk sits, suffusing this very body with a mind that is thoroughly purified and cleansed, so that there is no part of his body that is untouched by that thoroughly purified and cleansed mind. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now, that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Once his mind is concentrated in this way, once it is thoroughly purified and cleansed, stainless, without defilements, having become sensitive, workable, and steady, reaching a state that is unshakable, he applies and directs his mind towards knowledge and vision. He understands that this body of his has a physical form consisting of the four primary elements, that it is produced from a mother and father, and sustained by rice and gruel, that it is impermanent, gets scraped and bumped, breaks up and falls apart. And yet this is what his consciousness depends on, what it is bound up with. It is as if, Your Majesty, there were a gem, a beautiful cat's eye, pure, expertly cut with eight facets, bright, clear, without a flaw, perfect in every respect. And enclosed within that gem there might be a blue, yellow, red, white, or pale thread, A man with good eyes might take that gem in his hand and examine it, thinking, "This is a beautiful cat's eye gem, pure, expertly cut with 8 facets, bright, clear, without flaw, perfect in every respect. And enclosed within it, there is a blue, yellow, red, white, or pale thread." In exactly the same way, once his mind is concentrated in this way, the monk applies and directs his mind towards knowledge and vision. He understands that this body of his has a physical form, yet this is what his consciousness depends on, what it is bound up with. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Once his mind is concentrated in this way, once it is thoroughly purified and cleansed, stainless, without defilements, having become sensitive, workable, and steady, reaching a state that is unshakable, he applies and directs his mind towards creating a body made of mind. From his own body he creates another body that has a physical form made of mind. It possesses all limbs and bodily parts and lacks none of the senses. It is as if, Your Majesty, a man were to draw out a reed from reed grass. He would think, "This is the reed grass and this is the reed. The reed grass is one thing, the reed another. Yet the reed has been drawn out from this reed grass." Or again, as if a man were to draw out a knife from its sheath. He would think, "This is the sheath and this is the knife. The sheath is one thing, the knife another. Yet the knife has been drawn out from this sheath." Or again, as if a man were to pull out a snake from its slough. He would think, "This is the slough, and this is the snake. The slough is one thing, the snake another. Yet the snake has been drawn out from this slough." In exactly the same way, once his mind is concentrated in this way, the monk applies and directs his mind towards creating a body made of mind. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Once his mind is concentrated in this way, once it is thoroughly purified and cleansed, stainless, without defilements, having become sensitive, workable, and steady, reaching a state that is unshakable, he applies and directs his mind towards the various accomplishments in meditation. He enjoys the different accomplishments in meditation. Being one, he becomes many. Being many, he becomes one. He appears and vanishes. He passes unhindered through house walls, through city walls, and through mountains as if through air. He rises up out of the earth and sinks down into it as if it were water. He walks on water as if it were solid like earth. He travels through the sky cross-legged as if he were a bird with wings. He touches and strokes with his hand things of such power and energy as the sun and moon. He has mastery with his body as far as the world of Brahma. It is as if, Your Majesty, a skilled potter or his apprentice were to make or produce out of properly prepared clay any kind of vessel that he liked, or a skilled ivory worker or his apprentice were to make or produce out of properly prepared ivory any kind of ivory work that he liked, or a skilled goldsmith or his apprentice were to make or produce out of properly prepared gold any kind of gold item that he liked. In exactly the same way, once his mind is concentrated in this way, the monk applies and directs his mind towards the various accomplishments in meditation. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Once his mind is concentrated in this way, once it is thoroughly purified and cleansed, stainless, without defilements, having become sensitive, workable, and steady, reaching a state that is unshakable, He applies and directs his mind towards the sense of hearing that is godlike. With a godlike sense of hearing, which is purified and surpasses that of men, he hears sounds which are both divine and human, far and near. It is as if, Your Majesty, a man who had set out on a long journey were to hear the sound of a kettle drum, the sound of a tabor, the sound of a conch, cymbals, or big drum, and were to think, "This is the sound of a kettle drum. This is the sound of a tabor. This is the sound of a conch, cymbals, or big drum." In exactly the same way, once his mind is concentrated in this way, the monk applies and directs his mind towards the sense of hearing that is godlike. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Once his mind is concentrated in this way, once it is thoroughly purified and cleansed, stainless without defilements, having become sensitive, workable and steady, reaching a state that is unshakable, he applies and directs his mind towards the knowledge of states of mind. Using his mind, he knows the state of mind of other beings and people. He knows a mind affected with desire as a mind affected with desire. He knows a mind unaffected with desire as a mind unaffected with desire. He knows a mind affected with hate as a mind affected with hate. He knows a mind unaffected with hate as a mind unaffected with hate. He knows a mind affected with delusion as a mind affected with delusion. He knows a mind unaffected with delusion as a mind unaffected with delusion. He knows a dull mind as a dull mind. He knows a distracted mind as a distracted mind. He knows a higher mind as a higher mind. He knows a lower mind as a lower mind. He knows an inferior mind as an inferior mind. He knows a superior mind as a superior mind. He knows a concentrated mind as a concentrated mind. He knows an unconcentrated mind as an unconcentrated mind. He knows a freed mind as a freed mind. He knows an unfreed mind as an unfreed mind. It is as if, Your Majesty, a woman, man, or young boy fond of their appearance, while examining the reflections of their faces in a clear, clean mirror, or on the surface of a bowl of water, were to know a face with blemishes as a face with blemishes, and to know a face with no blemishes as a face with no blemishes. In exactly the same way, once his mind is concentrated in this way, the monk applies and directs his mind towards the knowledge of states of mind. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Once his mind is concentrated in this way, once it is thoroughly purified and cleansed, stainless, without defilements, having become sensitive, workable and steady, reaching a state that is unshakable, he applies and directs his mind towards the knowledge of recollection of previous lives. He remembers his numerous previous lives, one birth, two births, three, four, five births, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 births, 100, 1,000, 100,000 births, over many periods of expansion, over many periods of contraction, over many periods of expansion and contraction. He remembers, "In that life I had that name, belonged to that family, that class, had that food, experienced that unhappiness, that happiness, and met my end in that way. When I died there, I was born in that place. There I had that name, belonged to that family, that class, had that food, experienced that unhappiness, that happiness, and met my end in that way. When I died there, I was born here." In this way, he remembers the various circumstances and details of his many previous lives. It is as if, Your Majesty, a person were to go from his own village to another village, and then from that village to another village, and then from that village back again to his own village. He might think, I went from my own village to that village. There I stood in that way, sat down in that way, spoke in that way, remained silent in that way. From that village I went to that village. There I stood in that way, sat down in that way, spoke in that way, remained silent in that way. From that village I came back again to my own village. In exactly the same way, once his mind is concentrated in this way, the monk applies and directs his mind towards the knowledge of recollection of previous lives. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now, that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Once his mind is concentrated in this way, once it is thoroughly purified and cleansed, stainless, without defilements, having become sensitive, workable and steady, reaching a state that is unshakable, he applies and directs his mind towards the knowledge of the death and birth of beings. With the godlike vision that is purified, surpassing that of men, he sees beings dying and being born. He understands how beings are inferior or superior, fair or ugly, fortunate or unfortunate according to their actions. These beings behave badly in body, badly in speech, badly in thought, disparaging the noble ones. They held wrong views and performed the sorts of action that follow from wrong view. At the breaking up of the body after death, they were born in hell, a realm of loss, misfortune, and torment. These beings, on the other hand, behaved well in body, well in speech, well in thought, not disparaging the noble ones. They held right views and performed the sorts of action that follow from right view. At the breaking up of the body after death, they were born in a happy heaven world. In this way, with the godlike vision that is purified, surpassing that of men, he sees beings dying and being born. He understands how beings are inferior or superior, fair or ugly, fortunate or unfortunate, according to their actions. It is as if, Your Majesty, there were a building with an upper terrace at the crossroads in the middle of a town. A person with good eyes, standing up there, would see the people entering houses and leaving houses, walking along the streets or sitting at the crossroads. He would think, these people are entering houses, these are leaving, these are walking along the streets, these are sitting at the crossroads. In exactly the same way, once his mind is concentrated in this way, the monk applies and directs his mind towards the knowledge of the death and birth of beings. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Once his mind is concentrated in this way, once it is thoroughly purified and cleansed, stainless, without defilements, having become sensitive, workable, and steady, reaching a state that is unshakable, he applies and directs his mind towards the knowledge of the destruction of the taints. He truly understands what suffering is. He truly understands what the arising of suffering is. He truly understands what the cessation of suffering is. He truly understands what the practice leading to the cessation of suffering is. He truly understands what taints are. He truly understands what the arising of taints is. He truly understands what the cessation of taints is. He truly understands what the practice leading to the cessation of taints is. In the course of knowing this and seeing this, his mind is freed from the taint of sense desire. His mind is freed from the taint of being. His mind is freed from the taint of ignorance. And when it is freed, there is knowledge that it is freed. He knows birth is destroyed, the spiritual life lived, done is what was to be done. There is nothing further required to this end. It is as if, Your Majesty, there were a pool of water in a mountain valley, bright, clear and still. A person standing on the bank would see, either moving about in it or remaining still, shellfish, sand and pebbles, and shoals of fish. He would think, this is a pool of water, bright, clear and still. Moving about in it or remaining still are shellfish, sand and pebbles, and shoals of fish. In exactly the same way, once his mind is concentrated in this way, the monk applies and directs his mind towards the knowledge of the destruction of the taints. Your Majesty, this is a fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now that is superior and more refined than the previous ones. Your Majesty, there is no fruit of the ascetic life evident here and now that is superior and more refined than this. When these words had been spoken, King Ajatasattu of Magadha said to the Blessed One, excellent, sir, excellent. As if someone were to set upright what had been knocked down, or reveal what had been hidden, or point out the way to someone who was lost, or hold a lamp up in the dark so that those with eyes could see. Just so the Blessed One has made the truth clear in various ways. Sir, I go to the Blessed One for refuge, and to the teaching and the community of monks. Let the Blessed One accept me as a lay follower who has taken refuge from this day for as long as I live. Sir, foolish, deluded, and weak man that I am, I have done something wrong. In pursuit of power, I have taken the life of my father, the righteous and lawful king. Let the Blessed One accept this confession of my wrongdoing, and in the future there will be restraint. Indeed, foolish, deluded, and weak man that you are, you have done something wrong. In pursuit of power, you have taken the life of your father, the righteous and lawful king. But since you have seen your wrongdoing as wrongdoing, and properly repented of it, I accept your confession. For when one sees a wrongdoing as wrongdoing, and properly repents of it, achieving restraint in the future, this is progress in the discipline of a noble one. At these words, King Ajatasattu of Magadha said to the Blessed One, and now I must go. I have many duties and much to do. It is now time for you to do as you think fit. Then King Ajatasattu of Magadha, son of the Princess of Videha, delighting and rejoicing in what the Blessed One had said, got up from his seat, saluted the Blessed One respectfully, and left, keeping his right side towards him. Not long after King Ajatasattu of Magadha had left, the Blessed One addressed the monks. Monks, this king is ruined. He is destroyed. If he had not taken the life of his father, a righteous and lawful king, then the spotless and stainless vision of the truth would have arisen as he sat right here. This is what the Blessed One said. Gladdened, those monks felt joy at the Blessed One's words.